Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed Advent Calendar Day 2. Let's see who's behind the door.
My name is Russell Arnott and I am a marine biologist at the University of Bath.
And you study something really exciting in the oceans, don't you?
I study the most exciting thing of the oceans, because when you tell people that you're a marine biologist, they're like, ooh, you must ride a whale to work or skate around on turtles or have a pet seal or baby seahorses. Unfortunately, I always disappoint them when I tell them that I study plankton.
And that was the Cosmic Shed for today. I hope not. I'm not joking. But no, okay, so plankton are pretty cool, really. Is it plankton are? Is it plankton is? How does that work?
Oh, I would say plankton are pretty cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, no one's ever asked me that. I'm a show.
It's stuff on the Cosmic Shed.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, I are or is good. It's plural or singular.
Tell us about plankton.
Well, I think it's really important because a lot of things that we're taught at school are quite often just a little bit wrong or a little, not really the full story. So plankton actually make 80% of the oxygen that we breathe. So I think that's pretty important. We're always talking about the rainforests being the lungs of the earth and all this, but it's actually the ocean. If you like eating anything that comes from the sea, it's down to plankton. It's the basis of 99.9% of all food chains in the ocean. Oil is pretty important, and oil is made from plankton that died at the time of the dinosaurs. But there's all various other things that plankton do, such as make cloud condensation nuclei. So a lot of our clouds are formed by plankton.
It sounds like we already know a lot about plankton. So what are you studying?
So I study how the shape of plankton helps them become dominant in different situations. Because at the moment, when we try and model plankton dynamics to predict, you know, where food's going to be for fisheries or where harmful algal blooms happen, because some plankton are toxic, you know, we put it into a computer model, but we assume that all the plankton are spheres or sometimes rugby balls or little cylinders. And they come in an entire range of different sizes and shapes. They can change their size and shape. They can swim. This is the plants as well. So not just the zooplankton, because there's this whole group of things which are like halfway between a plant and an animal, like a planimal. And these are plants that can swim. And so it makes the kind of the modelling side of things quite tricky. So I'm trying to add my little bit to trying to help make these models better by incorporating an element of how does their shape help them become dominant.
Okay, so a planimal, let's pretend that's a real thing. What does that look like when one of those swims then?
Okay, so I'm looking at two different types of plankton at the moment, which I've just randomly found under my microscope. So one is a group called dinoflagellates, and the key word in the middle there is a flagella, which is a science word for a whip. So Indiana Jones has a flagella. If you're a bit kinky at the weekends, you get the flagella out. So these have a whip-like structure, which they whip whoopsh, whoopsh, as they swim through the water. But because they need to know where they're going, quite often they have a light detection organ, so they can swim towards the light to help them photosynthesize. They'll also have like a tutu-like structure around the middle of them, which they can flap up and down to help them position themselves and to swim as well. So that's a dinoflagellate. I also look at a type called ciliates, and which are kind of, I guess, distant relatives of jellyfish kind of thing. And again, these are like halfway between the two. And these really blew my mind because the one I'm particularly looking at is called Mesodinium rubrum. And it's like two balls on top of each other with a mini skirt going around the middle where the two balls meet. And when it's just hanging out in the water, it's got these like six like spikes, which it puts out into the water to stop it from sinking. But then as soon as something tries to eat it, it wraps those spikes around its top ball, exposing like a frilly mini skirt, which it then beats, and it can jump 33 body lengths.
Whoa.
Which for a plant is quite impressive.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really cool. But then I was like, they get even cooler because they have a mouth, And you're like, this is a plant that has a mouth. And you're like, why does it have a mouth? So when the cell is created, it can't photosynthesize. It doesn't have any chloroplasts. So it eats another phytoplanktonic cell, that another plant cell that has got chloroplasts, dissolves it, and then steals its chloroplasts, so then it can photosynthesize.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought plankton were little tiny green things. Are they all little tiny green things?
So the definition of plankton, it comes from the Greek word planktos, which means to drift. So it's basically small stuff that has difficulty positioning itself in the water. Yeah. It's like small stuff that can't go against an ocean current. So a fish can swim against an ocean current, whereas little planktony stuff floats around and it can't.
Okay, right. I feel sorry for the plankton being eaten by the whales all of a sudden.
Well, those are the zooplankton.
Oh, okay.
So tiny animals which feed on the phytoplankton, which are the tiny plants.
Okay, that's fine. Whales, you're off the hook. Now, I can't help but notice that you've got an octopus tattooed on your arm.
Yes.
So I'm guessing that your two favourite science fiction films are 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Arrival.
Well, I've got to say, Arrival, I was expecting like a lowest common denominator alien film. And I was just like, to be honest, I love those because I'm just like, since this has got an alien in, I'm like, yeah, yeah. And so things that used to really wind me up are like where the aliens aren't like good aliens. They're just like someone with like a mark on their forehead. I'm like, that is not a proper alien. So I was like, these are cool. The Sceptopods, I like them. But yeah, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, when I saw that, I was just blown away. And for me, it's really a really kind of key film because I grew up in Dubai in the 1980s where there was no TV. Yeah. And so all we had to watch was what we brought with us from England, like recorded off the TV with advert breaks. And I happened to have 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which was on Betamax.
Yeah.
And it was watched on repeat. And the giant squid scene, oh my, I mean, that, considering that film was filmed in the 50s, 60s, late 50s, yeah. I mean, the giant squid still looks real. That is how good that film is.
Yeah. Do you know, I think we should do a live version of that. We should show that film on a boat, get you along. Let's do it.
I would love it. I would, that would, basically, that I would just go and be like, my life is complete now.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do it at some point. So I'm kind of grateful to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Dubai for bringing us you as you are today. But what other science fiction did you see any others while you were there?
Well, I had A New Hope, Star Wars A New Hope on Betamax, and I had Return of the Jedi on Betamax. Oh. I didn't have Empire Strikes Back. So for ages, all this like, Luke, I'm your father. I just had to piece it together. I was like, what's going on? And I had my Star Wars figures and it used to really confuse me. That was like, where are these guys? Where are these people aren't in the film, you know? So yeah, I really like that. And Flight of the Navigator, you know, being a child of the 80s, that was a big favourite. The weird thing about growing up in Dubai is a lot of the videos were pirated that we could get there, but by people who'd just taken like a camera to the cinema. So you always had like laughing and people walking along the bottom of them. But there was also no age limits in Dubai. All rude stuff, like sexy stuff, was cut out being a Muslim country. But, you know, age 10, you could just go in and like hire Alien and Aliens and be like, ah, this is amazing. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, give you nightmares forevermore. Yeah. And yeah, I had a lot of alien based nightmares as a kid.
Did you watch The Abyss when it first came out?
No, I didn't. I think it was because the poster didn't look like it had an alien monster in it. So I wasn't like, I'm going to watch that. And so I watched that much later, I think, like, you know, maybe when I was at university. But
you were
fun? Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was good. Well, James Cameron, I graduated with him.
What?
Yeah, and I didn't know this, right? So when I graduated from the University of Southampton, and he got, at my graduation ceremony, an honorary doctorate. And I didn't, it took me ages to twig that it was the James Cameron until he got up and did like his thank you speech. And he got his doctorate for his work for progressing underwater camera work and camera technology, from which started on The Abyss, and then he took it on and did it with Titanic.
And Avatar 2 is coming soon. Are you excited?
Oh, well, I'll be honest. I did quite enjoy the first Avatar.
It's okay. It's okay.
Is that okay? Because people are like, I really felt at the end, I was like, we're going to go and save the rainforest. Yeah. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was like cheesy, but it did a good job. So
one of the criticisms that I heard of it repeated quite a lot was that it was the Pocahontas story kind of transposed. Mm. And if we're going to throw out any story which is based on a previous story, then we're going to be pretty short of films, aren't we?
Yeah, I guess. Like a lot of films, you know, are recycled. I mean, as much as I love them, the whole scientists doing something they shouldn't, oh no, it's gone wrong, I do really enjoy that. But I have noticed a thing in recent years with things like Jurassic World and the new The Predator film, where they're like, oh, these monsters just aren't good enough for like millennials. We need to make like some kind of super glow in the dark flying robo on ice hybrid to make it seem better. And in doing so, it just becomes like a CGI jizz fest.
Yeah.
And for want of a better phrase. Yeah. For me, it was that, okay, you think back to where the original Velociraptors and the terror that they inspired, just in that kitchen scene where they're going through, and the acting that those dinosaurs did. I mean, obviously they weren't real, but, you know, you were involved. They were the ultimate villains, you know, fast and intelligent. And then fast forward to Jurassic World, where Chris Pratt is on a motorbike, like riding with them through the forest. Like, come on, guys, let's go sort this out. And it's just like, what are you doing? What are you doing? This is ridiculous.
But like, if you look at Star Wars, one of the criticisms of Star Wars is that it's the new ones are just regurgitated stories and they just repeat the Death Star, but bigger, which is exactly what happened in the original trilogy anyway. But that's kind of what we do as humans, isn't it? Like, we go, we haven't quite sorted Syria with the bombs, so let's go and bomb Syria some more and that'll solve it. It's kind of, you know, it feels like that's what the baddies do.
Yeah, well, I guess humans aren't great from learning from their mistakes, are they? And I mean, I guess part of a good story is you want to be like, oh, is it going to go here? Is it going to go here? And people like stories where, you know, the baddies get their comeuppance and good triumphs. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why World War II history is so popular, because the Nazis were like the ultimate baddie and, you know, good triumphed in real life, you know, which is why that's one of the more enduring ones.
And why we have to pretend that we were all good at the time.
Yes.
Otherwise it all falls down.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's carry on pretending that's true. And but anyway, 2019, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm entering the last year of my PhD, so I'm really, really looking forward to not getting distracted by absolutely everything, which I'm really good at doing. This is, I don't know, they should have a thing that's like, if you have ADHD, don't do a PhD. And so I'm trying to do my best to not get distracted by loads and loads of like science outreach and SciComm and all the fun things which I enjoy doing, and just knuckling down and trying to write 100,000 words about plankton. Yeah.
Okay, but before 2019, we've got to finish this advent calendar, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to get out there doing some of your SciComm stuff. If you bump into anyone interesting, can you interview them for us?
I will. I've got a whole load of dates to distract me coming up. I'm going on the Cheltenham Science Festival Lab Live tour. And so we're taking, kind of some of the best shows of Cheltenham. We're taking them around the UK to various different events, and school kids are coming in, so they're in for a treat because I'm going to talk to them about plankton. But I mean, you know, it's one of those things when you're a kid, you're just like, you know, it doesn't matter what you go to, you're out of school, so it's got to be better than like double English.
Yeah, totally. Plankton better than double English, arguably not better than double maths.
It depends on the teacher.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, and hopefully we'll get you here again.
Cool, thank you very much.
Obviously, that was recorded a few days ago, and I'm delighted to say that Russell has really pulled some wonderful chats out the bag for us. They're going to be coming up in the rest of this advent calendar. Hope you've enjoyed this one. We've got a bit of a big name tomorrow. Big in space. Thank you for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.